May the words of my mouth and the meditation of all our hearts be holy and pleasing in your sight, O Lord, our rock and redeemer. Amen. In the 2009 movie Cold Souls, Paul Giamatti plays himself, Paul Giamatti. The Paul in the movie is also an actor by the same name. And at the beginning of the film, he is struggling. In the movie, Paul tends to get lost in the characters he plays on stage. He agonizes over each role he takes on, and he doesn't know how to leave work at the door when he heads home. So he suffers, constantly, quietly suffers. In the opening scenes, he struggles with a stage production of Chekhov's Uncle Vanya. The weight and seriousness of the character, the weight of life itself, it seems, just overwhelms him. He doesn't know what to do about it. Enter the strange and curious premise of the movie. While flipping through a magazine, Giamatti stumbles upon an article about a scientist who has done the impossible. He has discovered how to separate the human soul from the body. Dr. Flintstein treats his patient's souls as if they were tumors, cancerous growths that must be removed if we are to lead happy lives. The soul is the site of much suffering and existential dread, after all. And the good doctor has decided to nip the problem in the bud. After the procedure, after having 95% of their soul removed, his patients testify to feeling unburdened, happy even. Giamatti meets with the doctor, but he remains skeptical. He's afraid about the repercussions of putting his soul in cold storage. "I don't need to be happy," he says. "I just don't want to suffer." To which the doctor replies, "Do you honestly believe that it is enough to just live and not suffer? Do you honestly believe that it is enough to just live and not suffer? Everyone wants to be happy. I am sure you are no exception." Now, I won't spoil the rest of the movie for you. Suffice it to say that extracting the human soul has unintended side effects. I do want to linger, though, on the doctor's observation. Do you honestly believe that it is enough to just live and not suffer? Even if removing one's soul is misguided at best, not to mention impossible, he makes a good point. And I think the Gospel of John helps us see that today. In today's Gospel, we witness the events of the wedding at Cana, the moment that Jesus turns water into wine. It is his first miraculous act in the Gospel of John, and it is only found here. It's not a story that shows up in the rest of the Gospels. And this is worth noting, as is the fact that this is not technically a miracle. The writer of the gospel calls this a sign, not a miracle. Say meon in the Greek. Rather than simply proving Jesus' wonder-working power, a sign points to something beyond itself. It is meant to tell us something about who Jesus is and what his ministry is about. And as the first of seven such signs in the Gospel of John, this one holds special power. What does this sign say about the identity of the King of Kings and Lord of Lords? What does it say about the nature of his work here on earth? Jesus begins his ministry with rejoicing, my friends. Jesus begins his ministry by throwing a party. Now, it is not lost on me that this is not our usual picture of Jesus. We are more accustomed to Jesus, the wise teacher, the first century rabbi, the person who is here to correct the waywardness of human hearts. Or we see him as the suffering servant, always ready to put the interests of others above himself, expecting his followers to do the same. Both these pictures highlight the seriousness of Jesus' life and work, and rightly so. But we often confuse the end with the means. Jesus didn't come simply to scold us for the way that we failed to live up to God's law, nor did he come simply so that we might live a life of self-sacrifice, as if that were the end in and of itself. No, my friends, Jesus came so that we may have life, life abundant. This is the theme that resounds throughout the gospel according to John. It is not enough to just live and not suffer. It is not enough to just live and not suffer. It is often those who want to make the world better who need this reminder most. Caught up in a vision of the world as it should be, we tend to believe that our blood, sweat, and tears are proof of the value of our work, proof even of the value of our own existence. We like being needed, and yet Jesus came to us so that we may have life, abundant life. The end goal isn't struggle. We work so that we may better enjoy the life we've been given. We struggle so that others might do the same. This is one of the hardest lessons for us to learn sometimes. It's understandable. It is easier, as they say, to give than it is to receive. Easier to focus on someone else than to name our own needs and concerns. And yet, if Jesus came to bring us life, let me simply ask you this. What does life, abundant life, look like for you? In a world of cheap knockoffs, visions of happiness that are trite and fleeting, moments of immediate satisfaction that leave us feeling empty and alone, what kind of life might you actually enjoy? We need to remember that Christ came so that we may have abundant life. Our work to make this world better will suffer if all we know is pain, toil, and struggle. To enjoy life isn't just self-care. It helps establish the rhythms by which change on a grand scale is possible. To enjoy life is to live into the vision of the world Christ came to share with us. He came so that we may have life, life abundant. Now, today's gospel is a wedding party, a little microcosm of the heavenly banquet. And I am aware, of course, that nothing has been harder for the past couple of years than attending a wedding. But rest assured, my friends, weddings will return. Celebrations of all kinds, even in this time, are possible. And the work we do now, the adjustments we make in times of crisis to watch out for the health of our friends and neighbors and those whom we do not know, those little steps we take pave the way for the kind of world we miss and the kind of world the gospel imagines. In the words of the great Advent hymn, "Rejoice, my friends, rejoice. This too shall pass." Let us make room for the God who came to give us life and who, in the face of a broken world, amid trials and tribulations and wars and rumors of wars, showed up to a party one day, 2,000 years ago, and turned some water into wine. Amen.